welcome to episode 112 of the Golf Rules Questions podcast with Blakey and Stuart, aka Podcast McPhee. Blakey takes us through some interesting rulings from his recent time overseas in Muscat, Jeddah, Hong Kong and Macau, including a player that wanted to drop from shoulder height and what is least intrusive when it comes to moving loose impediments. Stuart also had a recent tournament where his main rulings were regarding TIOs and praying that the ball didn't move off the green. We also go through some clubland stories, including what makes a putting green a putter green, why do we say there's no free relief from interference by a rabbit hole, and clarifying what the rules say about playing two balls. But just before we get into that episode, I want to encourage you that if you like these podcasts, please share it with a friend or two. Send them a link and get them listening. As well as the podcast, Stuart and Blakey also produce The Drop Zone, which is a weekly rules newsletter that gives you some helpful hints, a few rules questions, and there is usually a funny video to keep you entertained and educated. So send us your email address if you have yet to sign up. And when you receive the newsletter, make sure to forward that on to your captain or manager at your club. They are free to distribute it to all of their club members. We also have merchandise that you can purchase so that you are representing the best Golf Rules podcast in the world. Grab a t-shirt, a hat, or even a hoodie featuring the Rules Roo or the Wombat Caddy. And now, whether you're in your car or going for a walk or just taking a break after mowing your lawn, enjoy this episode of the Golf Rules Questions podcast.
Oh, you see referee David Blake there. He's obviously talking to one of the rules officials up by the green.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Golf Rules Questions podcast. I'm Blakey and here with me is Stuart Podcast McPhee. Hey Stuart, how are you?
Very well, Blakey. How are you?
Very good. Just before we get into the episode, just want to make sure that everyone who is listening, watching, is subscribed to the Drop Zone newsletter, which comes out weekly. Stuart does the bulk of the work there. Well done. Thank you very much. It does have a new tour referee report by me. I just got back from 4 weeks away, so you can tuck into that over your next breakfast instead of reading the paper and hearing all the miserable news in the world. Stuart, how are we?
Yeah, no, great. It's been a while since I've been here in our studio to actually do a podcast in person. It's been a while because you've been travelling and doing lots of real tour referee stuff.
Yeah, I think I went away mid-February, and by the look of the state of my garden, it hasn't rained since then.
I don't think so.
I think it's the driest March in Melbourne on record so far, which is a shame. But yeah, we're going to get into the Golf Rules questions, apart from speaking about gardening and going away, of 112. Firstly, we have to go through the GRQ OTW 111, which was provided by our last guest, Mr. Michael Thomas. And the question was, when the player's ball is on the putting green, their line of putt is through the fringe. In this fringe is two sprinkler heads on that line. Is the player entitled to free relief from the sprinkler heads? And if so, how do they take relief? I've asked the question, you can answer it.
Okay, so the key is where their ball is currently situated, which is on the putting green, which does entitle them to free relief from any abnormal course condition as long as it's on the course, if it's on their line of play. So even though those sprinkler heads are off the putting green, they're still entitled to free relief. And we know if your ball is somewhere else on the course but not a penalty area, you're only entitled to relief if that abnormal course condition interferes with your area of intended stance, swing or lie, the ball not line of play. But the fact that you're on the putting green, you're good. So it's just simply finding the nearest point of complete relief to get you away from that sprinkler heads on your line of play. That nearest point of complete relief can be on the putting green, but it can also be in the general area. And regardless of which area of that course you identify that nearest point of complete relief, it's a place of the ball, not a drop. So it's just nearest point. Place it, play on.
So even if it's in the rough, thick, juicy rough.
Thick, juicy rough could be your nearest point of complete relief, at which point you may want to have a think about that before you actually lift the ball without leaving your marker in the place to take that relief.
And that's under rule 16.1D. I think Michael saw this at a recent tournament and brought it up. Actually put a photo of it on the Golf Rules Samaritan Facebook group. And that's what prompted his question when we had him on last for episode 111.
Now, we could mention, if I've got a moment, model local rule, you'll know this, I'm going to guess, F5.
Right.
Is that right? Yes, that's correct. Immovable obstructions close to putting green. So obviously then a lot of tours and a lot of clubs adopt model local rule F5, where your ball can be off the green, but you still have sprinklers or something like that interfering on your line of play, where you are still entitled to free relief should you meet the criterion of that model local rule, you know, which is typically the two club lengths, you know, two and two. So that's obviously something that can be adopted as well. Not in the rules of golf, must be a local rule that's been adopted.
That's very common around here in Melbourne, especially because of the tightly cut lie or tightly cut fairway around the green, rather than the thick bushy rough that's just off the green that you might find more in the USA. So yeah, that was the answer to Michael's questions. Now, I have been away, and so I was going to do a little rundown. I did a little rundown in my latest tour referee report, but I was in Oman first for the International Series Oman, my favorite course on tour. And I was only there for 2 days because I went to Jeddah on the Friday night to help set up, as in course set up. But there was one really interesting one where we had hardly any wind. We had great weather, actually, and we had hardly any wind, but the golf course is right beside the airport. Anyway, a player was about to putt and his ball moved on the green. And there's, as I said, hardly any wind. The greens weren't rolling more than sort of 11. So it was a bit of a weird one for us as to what caused this ball to move. Obviously, we believed the player didn't cause it to move, and you know, the other people in the group were in agreement with that. And it just so happened that it was just after a plane had gone flying overhead, and they get pretty low. And so there was this possibility that it was the plane that actually caused the ball to move. The wind blowing out of the engine afterwards. It's a far fetch, but really we didn't know what else it could have been. They are beautiful, those. You can see the plane come in. It's quite mesmerizing, actually, and you forget about the golf. But in that case, if it was the artificial wind created by the plane, an outside influence, then you have to put the ball back. But if it was a natural force, then you would only put the ball back if the ball had been marked, lifted and replaced, which it had been in this case. So that was an easy decision. It was always going to be that the ball had to be replaced. But yeah, there wasn't any, as we said, there wasn't any wind. It was hard. It wasn't on a steep slope, and the greens weren't running more than 11. So it was a ghost or something like that. But that was an interesting one. In Jeddah. So I helped in Jeddah with the course marking, and fortunately, the outer bounds is basically a wall. Although it's an interesting one because the wall itself is quite, it's not flat on both sides. It sort of juts out here and there. And so it's we were having a discussion about when the ball was actually out of bounds. And obviously the rules say beyond the wall, so the outside edge of the wall. And that's what we have in our hard card, beyond the wall. And so it could actually be on the ground outside the wall, but underneath an outer edge of the wall. But because that is not the edge defining it was right beside it, it was one ball that was vertically in exactly the same place. could be deemed inbounds, and one that was lower than that, horizontally lower, could be seen as being out of bounds. So that was that's an interesting thought, and I hope it never happens. Thankfully, it didn't in our tournament. I had a couple of rulings with one with Phil Mickelson, where his ball was in a penalty area on the 16th, and he was right beside a half-embedded rock, and I say, or half-embedded stone. I say half-embedded because I said to him, look, if you can move it, it just, you know, and it's easily movable, it becomes a loose impediment. And he tried to wiggle it, and it was moved slightly, and I said, yeah, I believe you if you want to try and pick that up. And he went to try and pick it up, and he said, what if it caused my ball to move? And I go, well, that's a one-shot penalty. He said, what if I take penalty area relief? And I go, well, that's a one-shot penalty too. And he goes, well, what happens if I cause my ball to move and then take the one-shot penalty? I said, well, the penalty area relief. I said, well, that'd be two-shot penalty, two separate one-shot penalties. So he opted not to choose to take to move the ball, to move the rock, and decided to take penalty area relief anyway, which was probably the smarter choice. The funnier thing was that David Pugh actually hit his ball right beside the same exact rock the next day, and he opted to try and move the rock, but then after moving the rock, didn't cause his ball to move. After moving the rock, he opted to take penalty area relief anyway for a one-stroke penalty because he didn't think that he could play the ball as it lied anyway. The funny, or the crazy thing about the Phil Mickelson one, he actually took the penalty relief, chipped in for par. And he knew what he was doing. He dropped it, rolled in the penalty area, dropped it, rolled in the penalty area, tried to place it, and it wouldn't come to rest, tried to place it again, wouldn't come to rest, tried to place, and then he found a spot, and I swear it was a millimetre inside the penalty area. Like a millimetre. Like I checked to see whether any of the ball was touching a blade of grass, and I'd marked the penalty area.
Was it marked with a line?
Right? Yeah, it was marked with a line, a red line. And I checked to see if any red painted blade of grass was touching the ball, but it wasn't, and it was millimetres in it.
Did it break the edge, like the plane?
No.
Straight up?
No.
Because we have vertical boundaries for the...
Yeah, okay. No, it didn't do that. So then he chipped in for par, which was pretty good. Anthony Kim made his, well, not his debut, but I guess debut on LIV. Back on professional golf from 12 years he's been away. Which was actually awesome. I didn't think he'd do that well. And he didn't do that well, but then all things considered, it was pretty amazing. And then he even played in Hong Kong and shot 65 in the last round. But we had a situation on 17 where he hit it right, and someone said they saw it bouncing down the path. We never found it. And in all likelihood, someone had picked it up on the way past. Did we get to 95% with that? No. It 80% probably, most likely. But we didn't have at least 95% virtual certainty. There could have been areas, or there were areas, where the ball could have, you know, been...
Definitely been lost.
Yeah. And small amount of areas, but, and we searched as much as we could, but there was a sort of a puddle of casual water or temporary water that it could have been in. We sort of tried to comb it with some clubs and stuff, but to be honest, he wasn't too fazed. He said, "Yep, let's go back to the tee." So I took him back to the tee, and then he went on his merry way and probably made a six or seven up there, and then. One of the funniest things, because he hasn't played professional golf in 12 years, he tried to drop from shoulder height.
Oh, jeez.
And I know everyone's going, oh, that rule changed 5-6 years ago. Well, True, but he hasn't really played much. So I think we said to him on the driving range, it's probably best anytime you have a ruling, just call someone. I know you don't want to bother anyone, but just call someone so we can help you out, because you know there are a few rules that have changed in the time that you wouldn't be aware of. So that was actually pretty funny. So then in Hong Kong, I didn't have too much going on. I was looking after holes 16, 17, and the most interesting one for me was the fact that I was in the same situation, or Matt Jones's ball was in the same situation as the situation we had at the Hong Kong Open 2023 on the 70th hole, which caused all the fuss. And, you know, going through all that and learning about all that, you know, moving loose impediments and doing so in the least intrusive way. And if it's reasonable when you do it in the least intrusive way, then if you move growing or attached natural objects, that is okay if you improve your conditions affecting a stroke. So let me say this again so I'm very clear. If you move a loose impediment and it moves a natural growing or attached natural object, and in doing so improves your conditions affecting the stroke, as long as how you moved that loose impediment was reasonable and it was in the least intrusive way possible, you're not going to get penalized. What is least intrusive is so subjective. I mean, I couldn't find anything more subjective than what is least intrusive. You know, if it's a rock, you can't break a rock. But if it's a tree or branch, you know, branch, you can break off the branch and branches. And is that least intrusive than trying to move it over here? And you know, it's very, very subjective. And so knowing everything that happened in November at the Hong Kong Open 2023, you know, we were very delicate and very cautious about moving anything, really. You are allowed to have some kind of movement, but it has to be the least intrusive, which, you know, subjectively, least intrusive to me is like, don't move it at all.
That's least intrusive. That's fair.
So, which, you know, it's not quite what the rulemakers would say, but to me, that's what least intrusive to me is.
Leave it alone.
Yeah, that's least
intrusive. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I mean, you move it an inch, that's the least intrusive.
But not as least as yours.
Yeah. So say we were allowing them to move it.
Yeah.
So least intrusive is not moving it at all. But say we allow it, so something. The least intrusive of moving it.
Yes.
1 inch.
Half an inch.
1 millimeter.
Yeah.
You know, it's so subjective. So knowing how bad it looks on TV.
And the time.
It's just a case of just don't do it. You'll just look like a bandit, you know.
If you're taking a lot of time, that can't be least intrusive.
Yeah,
can it?
That's right.
Should only take 3 seconds.
That's right.
That's least intrusive.
I mean, I don't know if you were going to talk about this one that we saw recently, Wyndham Clark.
You're right.
And he stood all over his relief area and then dropped his ball. I mean,
I spoke on another podcast about him grounding his club behind the ball and the ball moving. I spoke about that. We can talk about that.
Please do, because I don't think that committees penalise that enough. I mean, all the players these days think that they have a right to bang the club behind the ball. I mean, it's the weight of the club is what lightly grounding is.
So just to, as we digress, one of my favourite sayings, which is very applicable in the rules of golf, is if you fail to enforce a standard, you set a new standard.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The precedent is now set.
That's what's happening.
Yeah.
You've said that that's okay. We accept that. So that's the standard now.
Like, I would like to see at the US Open, because they usually have very long rough.
Right.
that, you know, that the USGA stand up and say, no, you can't be doing that. And then they set a new precedent. Because, you know, there's a ton of people that, professionals who want to play by the rules, and they see this rule and they think that it's a breaking of the rules and no one's penalising them. And they think, well, you know, can I get away with it? You know, not that they want to get away with it. They just want to get that advantage to be able to play their next shot as best as possible.
And ground the club lightly could be another one of your top three lists of subjective.
Very, very. But, yeah. But it is, but at the same time, it's the weight of the club.
I agree, and no more.
And no more.
Yeah, just literally let it gently place it down.
And if you keep doing this...
repeatedly, 8 times...
Yeah,
right.
And using a 3-wood and then going to your wedge.
You drop.
Patrick Reed.
Anyway, we digress.
So just to finish off, so that was Hong Kong. Nothing else sort of happened in Hong Kong, but it was brilliant. It was great to see Abraham Anser get the win, even though he tried to choke it up on the last day. He was great in the playoff, and that 18th hole at Hong Kong is unbelievable. It's so hard. So last event I had was Macau, and I actually stepped up to the chief referee duties. Chief referee's underneath the tournament director. So the tournament director sort of looks over everything, but the chief referee sort of mainly focuses on pace of play, which I was happy to do. We did have an interesting situation there, actually, and it just come to mind, where a group was waiting for a ruling and they asked the end of the hole scorer. So we didn't have walking scorers. We had end of the hole scorers. And they asked the end of the hole scorer to get a referee, and the end of the hole scorer, you know, being in Macau, language barriers, wasn't quite clearly communicated, and that didn't get back to the referees. And so group 41 invited group 42 to go through and pass through them. In my mind, that's actually a smart idea, but they shouldn't really, and the committee can ratify this group out of order after the fact that it happened. And given the reason that it happened, we were pretty happy with it. Although there were more circumstances, more things to that came to light after this. But we had a chat to them and said, look, you shouldn't really do this unless a referee is present. And they said, yeah, there was a referee present. But we just said, you shouldn't really do this unless there's a referee present and they give you the go-ahead. Otherwise, just wait and stay in order. And yeah, so that was an interesting one, talking about them. I could clearly see that the groups were just trying to play as fast as possible, and, you know, for a pace of play purposes. So an interesting one there. But we ended up, one of the guys, one of the players, the player that won, ended up having a 59 on the Saturday. And then the player who made the playoff had a 60 on the Sunday. So scoring was red hot. The course is short, and it can be tight in places, but just mainly short. Like, they have about 6 par fours that are under 340 meters, and that's almost drivable for professional men golfers these days. 340 meters. You know, there was one the 15th hole downhill over water, and they were just going, I can hit 300 yards on the fly, 270 meters on the fly, and get it on the green, and, you know, chip in 2-putt or chip in 1-putt type thing. So scoring was elite, and the guy that ended up winning, he just missed a putt on the last hole to go into a playoff. So I had the lucky duty of walking down the hole 18, which is a par 5, a couple of times for the 2 playoff holes. And John ended up getting it done on that second playoff hole. So that was, it was awesome to be involved in the playoff there. The last thing I wanted to say, last couple of things, we had a
for that tournament, we had one referee. I could see that hole two, which used to be a par five, we played as a par four, was going to cause us a lot of angst. So I said to a referee, you just need to stay on this hole. Like, this hole will, and that's exactly what happened. That hole caused more rulings than the rest of the front nine. So we just had that referee stay there, and he was giving rulings near to every second group, basically. Back on the line.
The obvious question is why?
For unplayables. So just being there, helping with searches, timing ball searches, balls that went right, didn't cross the penalty area further up, so they had to go drop back down there. Balls that went left, luckily left was dead, and dead if you walk too far as well. There was a cliff about a metre out in the deep rough, so you couldn't lose your ball in the rough or the fairway, obviously. But deep rough, which was a metre in, it just dropped a cliff about 50 metres. So thankfully they just said, my ball's just there, or I had a provisional and we can go from there. So it sort of sped up play because I didn't search for the ball as much. And the last thing, we did have a spotter there, and the one on the Thursday, Friday was really good. The one on the Saturday, Sunday was actually pretty good as well, but there were other spotters at other places around the course that weren't so good. And it's better not having a spotter at all than having a bad spotter.
Yeah, yeah. Because of players.
If you get a bad spotter, they'll put up the wrong flag, and then it just it's no good. The players get confused, and then they call you in anyway.
And upset.
So, that's my 4 weeks on tour. And my next tournament is Adelaide in about 3 weeks. So just gearing up for that. Now, you had a tournament while I was away.
I did, only one. So that was the last event on the Challenger PGA Tour of Australasia season down at a wonderful golf club that you know well and I know well, and many of our listeners know, the National. We played the Moona course. I've never heard.
That's the Greg Norman design.
I couldn't confirm.
The Moona one's the Greg Norman's.
I've never heard such few calls over the radio for a ruling.
Really? Even less than what we had the Heritage?
I reckon, there was like one on... I reckon there was either Thursday or Friday, there was zero calls over the radio. Zero.
Okay.
Now, there's no penalty areas.
No.
That probably helps.
Yeah.
The Friday was very windy, so I'm surprised we didn't get some calls for balls moved on the green, or especially on the green, because the greens are so firm.
Right.
Surprised, but we didn't. Certainly a few more on Saturday, Sunday, even though obviously you got a better group of players playing on the weekend. And then on the last day, I was situated on the last four or five holes, which included, of course, the 18th and the marquee behind. I had a interesting situation where there were two dropping zones placed either side of the TIO behind the 18th green, the marquee, and not one player that I'm aware of, and I saw quite a few take relief from it, not one used one of the dropping zones.
Okay.
Because it was like on a really bad slope and the grain was right into them, and they just looked at it, they'd had one look at it, the players, and turned around and goes, can I go somewhere else?
Right.
So I radioed the tournament director in jest late on Sunday afternoon. I said, these dropping zones are ready to go for next year because... not one player has dropped in them.
Yeah,
because, right. They were pristine, those dropping zones. That was just unusual.
So they didn't really speed up play at all?
No, because they needed someone to say, what else can I do? Yeah. So I just gave them the 16.1 standard, just swing around where they no longer had interference, identified the nearest point of complete relief than a club length, no nearer the hole. So basically every player opted for that. And that hence why I got quite a few phone calls on the Sunday, and then I just... once the field was compressing and coming in and closing it, the last groups on 13, 14, 15, that sort of stuff with plenty of referees down there, I just then sat myself on the 18th, next to the 18th green, and sure enough, back left pin, rock hard greens, and sure enough, quite a few just went slamming into the back, into that TIO, or they've almost stopped at the green, at the hole, and then just kept going, and then 27 seconds later, they've eventually rolled off, and because it's just that slow trickle, is it going to stop? Still going, and then it just ended up at the back. But Yeah, so there wasn't much else.
Either side on your tee out.
Yeah,
either
side. Yeah. So I had a question, a previous hole, there was a beer truck set up, which wasn't in operation. This is a previous day. And it's on the 17th of par 3, long par 3, and he's just hit it way right. Hit a provisional because it was so far right. I went down, found both. The original was line of play, was this beer truck right on his line of play. and one of our listeners was there as a caddy, Nichols DC. They're caddying for his son, who's a club champ at that club. And but one of the, so I gave this player relief, and it was either side. And I said, we can go this side as well, which was much more favourable, but further away from where his ball was to the other side. And of course, one of the other players, once the flag stick went in, one of the other players going, what's going on?
Yeah.
How come he could drop there to tie the side? His choice. Which is right, you know, it's, and it was much more favourable. So it wasn't the nearest point, which wasn't as favourable. It was, anyway. Yeah, so not much going on. It was a great tournament, great weather, very windy, of course. The fans start by around 10 or 11 and they don't turn off. The fans down there, it's just so windy.
You know, given its, spectators.
Given its location, very funny. Yes, we've got fans and spectators down there as well. very, very windy is obviously my reference to the word fans. I had a few comments about some of your rulings, if that's all right.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Was the Kim ball search the one that went for well beyond 3 minutes? Is that one? Because I had someone message me about it.
That's the one they said that went on for well beyond 3 minutes. Did it?
Like,
no. So I talked to... why don't you bring this up when we actually had the...
I didn't want to interrupt you.
You should have interrupted me. So I talked to Bubba and I said, Bubba, how long have they been searching for? And he said, well, they had to step aside because that group was playing... the 15th, so they waited for that group because this was 17 and 15 are sort of semi-parallel for the first part of the drive on 15 anyway, and they waited, so that didn't count as a search time. So I said, you know, and I sort of said, well, so they're what, they've been searching for a minute when I got there,
right?
And then they said, he said, yeah, that'd be about right. So I said, okay, we've got 2 minutes left, guys, we searched.
So someone may have been watching, not aware of the pause on the search time and gone, hang on a second, they got there well and truly more than 3 minutes ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But they weren't actually technically on the clock.
Correct. They weren't searching. And, you know, whether that was actually true or not, I can only find that out from the other player in the group who's marking his card, and he was happy that that was what happened. They actually stopped the search to wait for the other guys to play.
That must have been it then.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was, you know, someone just asked me, what if it's beyond the 3 minutes? I said, well, you can keep searching. Obviously, you're holding up play. You can keep searching, but for no benefit. You know, well, just saying about, you know, it's a wrong ball.
I think there's a rule in there about unreasonable delay if you keep searching.
I'm sure there is. Yeah, I'm saying about delaying play, but unreasonable delay, 5.6.
Yeah.
anyway, that was all. I just wanted to mention. That must have been the situation because I had one or two people contact me about it. You know, with the ball moved, you mentioned on the green, the aircraft and the stuff. Reminds me of a situation recently of a player, and, you know, they've got the player and the referee on the spot and other players have got to be that 95% sure, 95% did the player cause the ball to move. You know, in the rough, long grass, a few practice swings, pressing the ball down, the club below the ball just before you're about to hit, and it's 95% certainty. And if we can't pin it down to, you know, player outside influence and the like, or caddy, then it's natural forces, defaults back to natural forces. I sometimes find it interesting and almost too coincidental that a ball can be hit, do its path, come to rest, be there for 5 minutes, not move, and all of a sudden the player gets here and it moves. And then they go, no, well, I didn't cause it to move.
Yeah.
It was there for 5 minutes though. Didn't move.
I tend to agree with you on that, but it's probably easier. It's, you know, 10 years ago that was a penalty, regardless. If you're anywhere near it and it sort of moves, I think they even said if you're anywhere within a metre.
Right.
And it moves.
Hence probably the expression addressing the ball they used to use, right? Yeah. Addressing the ball.
Exactly right.
Were so you then, in that addressing, you know, phase?
So then they... you know, they were sort of they found that it was wrecking the game. In that, you know, people getting penalised in these big tournaments when the green is being shaved, you know, and even some of the fairways are cut so tightly, and the chance of a ball moving is a lot higher.
Mm.
So they're like, okay, well, we'll just go down to the virtual certainty, 95%. So, you know, there definitely could be a situation where you walk up and it's semi-windy, but then your between your legs creates a wind tunnel, blows the ball. Now, who caused the ball to move? Was it you or the wind? I mean, the wind didn't technically, wasn't technically hard enough or strong enough, but when you created the wind tunnel. Now,
jeez.
If you're standing there and the ball's that far away and it just moves, is the first thing you're going to be thinking about is I caused that to move because I created a wind tunnel?
I wouldn't have thought that's your first thought.
No, I wouldn't think so either. Even though it could have been the truth. It doesn't get ruled like that. You work out, you know, if someone's careless near the ball and they cause their ball to move, or the ball moves and they're careless near their ball, then I'm happy to penalise someone for that. I mean, I still think that you should be cautious around your balls.
Which reminds me of what you said about Mickelson and the loose impediment in the penalty area and eventually taking relief and making par. Reminds me of the scenario, nothing to do with Mickelson, but that scenario of your ball's in a penalty area and you want to just clear out a few things around it, like loose impediments. And then all of a sudden your ball moves from your actions and you very, very quickly pick it up and go, oh, I was taking relief. You know, and then that establishing the facts. The rule is easy. It's just you need to establish the fact of was the player, when that ball moved, 100% taking relief.
Yeah.
Because we know, you know, he picks the ball up to take relief. There's no penalty for that.
Yeah, that's
right.
You're
applying a rule. But, you know, being so quick to... I better take it out here because I'm already at one penalty stroke. Well, I can do the same by just dropping it out here and getting a better lie if they're that quick. Not saying that player is that person. I'm just saying that's one of the scenarios where, you know, it comes back to the integrity of the player and establishing the facts with that player and that player, as we say.
Well, it's very similar to, and we've seen this a bit, and I had it a few times. I had it in Macau, I had it in, might have been in Jeddah too. Where did the ball cross into the penalty area, you know? And so many people will go, oh yeah, my ball was going straight and then just took a left-hand turn, like 90 degrees. And you're like, and even when I sort of see it, and I'm just like, I don't think I saw it that way. And then two or three of the players are like, yeah, no, we saw it this way.
Mm.
Like, well, how can I...
Yeah.
You know, unless I'm absolutely...
Who are you to come in and...
That's right. Unless I saw it going over my head.
Yeah.
You know, it's... Yeah, it's not... And we see these players push further up and go, oh, yeah, definitely cross. Like, there was one, obviously, the Rory one from the other day. He had two, and he talked about the one on six, on seven, where he was like, no, I'm just trying to do the right thing. But the one on 18, I mean, it clearly looked like he just crossed at the tee.
So, I didn't see that one. I saw the other one, obviously. Yeah. Because that took way too long.
Yeah.
Just with Hovland and Spieth.
Yeah, the one at 18 was the worst one.
Oh, okay.
The one at 7 seemed to be okay because it did bounce, but whether that was inside or outside, who knows. But the one at 18, he looked like it was just straight left off the tee. And then he's dropped it way further up, and it's like, I mean, he still shot 7 under that day. It was insane.
So I was asked to make a few comments about that Rory one. And again, my issue came back to how long it took. Because it's all very well and good to, they had the Hong Kong Open last year, and do the right thing there. It's all very well and good to establish where we think it last crossed the edge of that pin. It's all very well and good to do that and use reasonable judgment and the like, but you can't stand there for 20 minutes. Not that they took 20 minutes, but you can't stand there for ages talking about it.
Yeah, they seem to. They took, I think,
well, it took seven. Nine. Yeah, it was definitely seven. It's way too long.
Yeah.
Just get on. I mean, imagine, you know, and I know, the flow-on effect that has to the groups behind. Well, you know, that's just them. They just finish a little bit late. But
they didn't finish. They had to suspend play.
Yeah, that's right.
And come back. And, you know, so they had 144 players, 12 hours. 12 hours and 1 minute. We had 144 players in Macau and 11 hours and 54 minutes or something like that, or vice versa.
Mm.
And we got finished with 18 minutes to spare. Yes, our course was a little bit easier.
Shorter, isn't it?
But they didn't get finished, and they had at least three groups that were still out, you know, needed to finish their rounds.
Yeah, the issue with that is just the time, isn't it? It's just really just get on with it.
Like. Yeah.
I mean, we're never going to know for sure. Unless it was someone standing right there and goes, right, saw it bounce right here, there's the mark, and then it crossed the red line right there.
And now they...
And the spotter's not going to stand there.
The worst thing is they call the referee and then they ask, you know, get the cameras involved. And it's there's not cameras following every shot trail.
No, and even the camera from the other side, of course, didn't show where it landed.
Exactly.
And as you know, again, you know, when you're called in and you haven't seen any of this, and now you're getting three different, you know, you're getting stories from three people.
Yeah,
and you very quickly have to, and the players, they're going, who's already dropped, by the way, so has a ball in play, you know, and you've got the other two, and you've got to just try to work out, is it two versus one, you know, and you've heard plenty of times when a player will describe the flight of their ball.
Yeah.
Well, I hit a cut, or hooked it, or it was just, you know, fading a little bit, and they'll try to describe the shape of their ball flight to try to get an indication of where it crossed.
Yeah.
And McIlroy did it, in fact, on that seventh hole. It's happened to me at tournaments where players describe, it was definitely cutting a little bit or whatever else. Yeah. And then, unfortunately, and I won't name him, but I've heard a player go, oh, I thought it hit this branch and hit this way. You know, in other words, it's not known or virtually certain it was in the penalty area, therefore I want it to be a lost ball.
Yeah.
Which is a bit unfortunate. That player plays that way, but anyway, that's another story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that hole in Macau, the second hole where we put a referee specifically there, you know, I was there for a bit and I could see the balls, and you know, we'd drawn the penalty area between two trees. I thought that was a bit silly, like either having include both trees or don't include any, you know, try and get it back. So because if it hits this tree and goes back in, this guy gets, this is his last place crossed. If it hits this tree and goes back in, his last place cross is 60, 80 metres back down there. So, you know, he's going to come up and this line's hand, he's like, oh, I definitely hit this tree. And if you're not strong enough or you didn't see it, you're going to say, oh, I guess so.
I assume the red lines were there before you got there.
The red lines are drawn by our group, though. R1. Okay. So just include, I like to include trees as well, because then you've got more virtual certainty that the ball has gone in. Where it's gone after that?
Sure. But
you can maybe work it out.
But you've got the option of where it crossed.
Yeah, that's right.
To take relief.
It's more likely that it's still in the penalty area.
Yeah.
So the National, we finished that. It's your last tournament.
For a little while.
What do you got next?
Don't know.
Q school?
I'm going away. School holidays. Yeah, right. I was asked, but going away for 2 weeks. So.
Oh, we know where your priorities lie.
Yes, with my family.
The Golf Rules
Podcast. How embarrassing. I'm ashamed.
I would be. So you had a couple of... Well, we've got some Clubland stories.
We have plenty, which... We love, which is just fantastic. I mean, we just love these. A lot of them, not all, but a lot of them are real. Things that have really happened on a golf course. Some are, you know, just purely hypothetical.
Yeah.
But we do love them.
Dave has responded to one of our questions, your weekly question about playing a second ball. Well, correct, it's incomplete. Stuart should have declared which ball he wished to use when unsure about how to proceed. He did not do so. Therefore, when he picked up the original ball and dropped it in the relief area and played, that became his chosen ball. All okay so far, but now he doesn't have an
original ball on the original spot and would have to place another ball. In essence, why doesn't he not incur a one-stroke penalty for causing his ball to move? If the committee rules have he was entitled to relief, there's no issue. But if they don't, why don't we treat the situation the same as if he couldn't take relief?
So I asked that very question because I read that clarification and I was surprised. I was surprised by that. Sorry, back to the first bit. Yes, I should have said that you've got to nominate which ball to count, but you don't have to.
That's right.
One will be chosen by default if you don't say anything.
The first one played is the one chosen by default.
In accordance with the rules. So yes, you can nominate, which you don't have to. It's a should, not a must. But the reason why I wrote that question was I was surprised by the clarification, which said you can pick up the original ball without marking its spot.
Yeah.
Put it into play somewhere else,
yes,
and then put another ball back where the original ball was. I find that odd, but that's in the clarification, hence I wrote the question based on that clarification.
Why would they write that clarification? I'm not sure. Maybe that person really liked that ball.
I just found it surprising. I was really surprised by that. Had I not known that clarification, I probably would have got that wrong. Anyway, hence that's where the question was born from. So I could find the clarification. It's obviously under 20.1C3 somewhere.
20.1C3/3/3,
there you go. Yeah. Hmm. There you go. But thank you for your contribution. Always love the comments coming in.
And the player does not need to mark the spot of the original ball before lifting it.
Yeah.
Although it is recommended that this is...
Sure, but again, not doesn't have to. Hmm. And again, I find that odd.
Yeah.
Because you need to put another ball back.
Replace
it. Correct. So I find that odd. Anyway, that's in the clarification. So
okay. Next one.
Thank you.
I hope that helps, Dave. Baz, a junior pennant fixture last week, the club had to take a green out of play due to maintenance issues. So a hole was cut some 30 metres short on the fairway. Not having time to prepare the new green area, it was literally just a hole in the middle of the fairway. The question was asked by one of the caddies, where does the green start and end as there was no defining edge, mile mark or line on the ground? So could they mark, lift and clean their ball anywhere on the closely mown surface on this hole? Decided, this is in WA, decided that an amicable agreement between the players as to whether they considered the ball to be close enough to the hole and therefore on the putting surface and were permitted to mark, lift and clean the ball. Well, a few things going on here. A, the committee hasn't done their job. You know, there can be times when you have to take a green out of play, not having a slight on the maintenance team, but there are going to be times when that happens. But if you are going to take a hole out of play, I mean, what they could have actually done was say, okay, 17 holes. The course today is 17 holes. Or even 17 holes and you have to play the first again. It probably would have been a better option. If they didn't have time to prepare a specifically prepared area for putting.
I would have liked when they cut that hole to grab some spray paint and just whack a couple of dots. Easy. Sorry, not a couple of dots. Whack dots around it.
Oh, I wouldn't have whacked dots because the dot is point to point straight.
No, I get that. I'm talking about the least amount of time. You know, to just prepare something to make it. Yes, a line would be ideal.
A line would be perfect.
Of course. But that'd be perfect because then we know exactly
where the edge is. And then on the line is in. And,
right. To define a green, effectively.
But yeah, they really just haven't thought about the implications of creating this new green.
And there are plenty of rules which relate to when your ball's on a green, which are not applicable elsewhere.
I mean, the question that Baz has asked, could they mark, lift and clean their ball anywhere on the closely mown surface? Is the closely mown surface the area that's specifically been prepared for putting?
Or is it just the fairway?
I would say no. But his point more is, well, what if you say no, what is the specifically prepared area for putting?
Yeah.
And it hasn't been defined. I'm not saying you can use the whole fairway because that is a definition.
So you get the laser. I'm 47 metres, guys. Can I mark my ball and lift it and clean it?
It actually hasn't been defined. I mean, when I started reading this question, I thought he was going to say we all just gave the players two putts and they moved on. I'm glad they didn't. But the better idea here would have been take that hole completely out of play, play 17 holes, or tell everyone that they have to play the first again or another hole somewhere.
Good one.
That would have been a much better idea than have this. But so next, we haven't quite got fixed it. Decided on amicable agreement between the players as to whether they consider the ball to be close enough. Is that a breach of the match play rules?
They're playing a match. Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Have they agreed to waive?
Yeah. It's a bit tough, isn't it? Because they're doing the committee's job.
Exactly. I was going to say, if a committee said, oh, guys, you're both gone, I'd say, hang on a second, you should be gone.
Yeah, that's right. You're fired.
Yeah, you should be gone, not us.
So because it's a match, that's awesome. Because at least each group can just decide on their own.
Yes.
And basically do the committee's job. Whereas stroke play, who knows what, you know, some people would have said 10 metres or some people would have said 100 metres.
Exactly.
I would say to that, Baz, probably better to ring the committee, and I hate to say this, ring the pro shop and see what they say. And if they say, yes, the whole fairway is the specially prepared area, I would say, no, I need to talk to someone else in the pro shop.
And they could just simply say, if you're within 12 paces of the hole. Something like that.
I would say to the pro shop, look, have you got a can of paint? Come out here right now and we're not moving until you spray this green. That would be the smartest idea. Yeah. But what actually ended up happening, considering everything, is probably the best result, where the two players just decided who was on the green and who was
top. And if there's other matches following, they should have the same question and be ringing the pro shop.
Yeah, well, they're exactly right. Exactly right.
Because they'll be looking at each other clueless, the two players.
It's exactly right. Rightio. Jerry. Bird scrapings damage. You briefly mentioned on a recent podcast that there was no relief for stance when taking relief from rabbit scrapings. I've looked in the rules and clarifications and haven't found reference to the circumstance. I'd like to find out more.
Hmm.
Relief from the ACC includes stance. And we totally agree with you, Jerry. We usually, hopefully we did at that time, but maybe we missed it. We usually clarify that this is on the hard card of the professional tours that we referee on. So I've got two hard cards here. One's from Live Golf, and one's from the Asian Tour. And I actually haven't thought about doing this, but because it's right in front of me, I will. And there's a little box over here on this side. The following apply in Asian Tour competitions, but may not apply on other major tours. And 21, in addition to the local rule 3 above, animal holes. Model local rule F6 is in effect prohibiting relief when only stance interference exists. So we talk about professional tour tournaments that we referee at a lot, and we don't give free relief for stance. But otherwise, in the normal rules of golf, 16.1A, you do get relief for stance.
Yep.
But when you're on tour, you do not.
Yeah, abnormal course condition physically interferes with the player's area of intended stance or area of intended swing. You get free relief.
So just clarifying that, Jerry. But thank you very much for the question. DK. This is DK's ninth submission.
So not his first question.
Playing match play. We did find out where he is, but yeah, we won't be providing that information. But a massive fan of the podcast, and we love that. Playing match play. Player A has the honour and hits his tee shot into a nearby tree. The ball bounces off the tree and back past the player, coming to rest behind the teeing area, further away from the hole than where the tee shot was hit from.
player B, who is yet to tee off, tells his opponent that he must hit the next shot before player B tees off, as A is further away from the hole. Player A disagrees and calls the golf shot for a ruling.
That's funny.
Player B is ordered to play his tee shot before player A plays his second shot, but because B has not yet started the hole. Rule 6.4A1, third dot point. DK, you're doing our job too. You're asking the questions and you're answering the questions, which is usual by you. But you're spot on. It's all about order of play. Order of play on the tee is different to order of play once the hole has been started by all players. Is that the easiest way to say?
Yeah, you've got to start the hole before you enact the sort of who's furthest away.
And, I mean, this was match play.
That's hilarious, though. But...
So, order of play and match play actually does mean a lot. Whereas in stroke play, it can mean something. Some people can get some information when others play first. But we do encourage ready golf. And I am encouraged ready golf on the professional tours. I actually had a situation in Hong Kong where a player was asking for a second opinion at a par five. He'd hit it right. It was the referee correctly said no free relief from a TIO. And he asked, I came in to give a second opinion. I said, also said no free relief from the TIO. It's not even in your way. He said, yeah, but I'm going to chip it back out that way. I go, yeah, but it's not in between you and the flag. So, and then he knew that the game was up and he said, oh, can I get a ride back? And I said, yeah, sure, we'll give you a ride back. He gets on the cart, then that snaps or something. So then he had to jump off and walk back and they tried to fix the cart. Yes, this happens. In the meantime, the two other players were on the tee of the next hole and they said, can I tee off? And I said, yeah, go ahead. Now, should I have waited for that player to have actually finished the hole? Possibly, but there is no issue if they could see that other player playing anyway. And these guys are obviously like to play fast, which I enjoy.
And, you know, in the back of our mind throughout every day of every event is pace of play.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the back of our mind. And I have been in that situation where I said, guys, can you keep going? And I'm almost going to certify. I'll tell you what he scored. I'll come up. Who's the marker? I almost go, who's the marker? And Ralph will put his hand up. I say, well, I'll just confirm for you his score when he, you know, when he gets to the tee and I catch up with you. Because the pace of play is just...
Yeah, I think people are starting, the professional golfers are starting to realise what the product is. And the product is... playing in within a specific time period. Yes, we want to see you hit good shots, but we want you to not dawdle and piss around so we can actually see more good shots or more shots, right? If someone like Wyndham Clark takes 2 minutes for a putt, that is a snore fest, that is boring. Having his caddy line up as well is just ridiculous, and that needs to be stamped out of the game. At LIV Golf, are definitely trying to do that, but you know, other tours need to start doing it as well, because I would prefer to see 4 shots within 2 minutes minimum than seeing one guy walking around trying to work out where his putt goes. To me, that is boring and I'm turning it off. Right, I think that is enough for today. We've actually got a lot more Clubland stories. So I think next episode we might just do specifically Clubland stories. And yeah, we do. We've had heaps because we've been away for a while. Now, without further ado, podcast has his GRQ OTW of episode 112.
GRQ OTW for episode 112. Andy the Average Golfer is playing an individual stroke round at Wombat Hills Golf Club. On the fifth hole, his ball is lying just on the front of the putting green for 4, and he has interference from temporary water on the green between his ball and the hole. He lifts his ball from the putting green without marking the spot, nor without announcing to anyone what he is doing. He estimates his nearest point of complete relief from the temporary water, which is just off the green on the fringe. He changes the ball and drops a new ball near the nearest point of complete relief. which then rolls away from the hole. However, it remains within the one club length from the nearest point of complete relief. He takes another four strokes to hole out. How many strokes has Andy, the average golfer, had on the fifth hole?
At least 15 shots.
He is average.
Oh. Right.
15 is incorrect, by the way.
Hopefully you got through that question without falling asleep. No, hopefully you got through that question and you'll send us what you think the answer is. You can do that in the comments on YouTube or send us an email if you're listening on the podcast, golfrules.questions@gmail.com. If you haven't signed up for the newsletter yet, you can send me an email about that as well. And if you do see, here's another one. If you do see any rulings, even if they're the most basic nearest point of complete relief off a cart path type thing on tour, PGA, European, Asian, LPGA, whatever it is, feel free to send me through some information about it. I'll try and find it. Or even if you've managed to capture that video, send it through. That would be fantastic. But thank you for listening in to episode 112. I'm Blakey signing off, and so is podcast.
Thanks, Blakey. Great to be back.